Finally this week, a question. Why does a picture need a frame? And if a work of art should be framed, will just any old frame do? In our conversation spot today, we're about to meet a man who has spent the past 4 decades perfecting his skills as a picture framer. He's just mounted an exhibition in Melbourne where gallery goers are invited to look not so much at the picture, but at what goes round it. So, Neville Crawford, welcome to By Design.
Thank you.
While you do sometimes see an unframed canvas hanging on the wall of an art gallery, most of them are framed. So why do you think this is, and how far back do we have to go in art history to trace the origins of the frame?
Well, I mean, if we go back to the very early days, I mean, any surface you could decorate, the human body, a cave wall and so on. When man started to build settlements, he started to build walls, and with walls came architectural ornaments, and with that we tend to have the origin of the picture frame, be it Egyptian, Greek, or wherever.
Although, of course, a lot of early pictures, I suppose, aren't framed precisely because they are part of the architecture. They're things like altarpieces or frescoes, which don't have frames.
Well, that's correct, because that, you know, and the architecture is actually forming the surround. With the late Middle Ages and early Renaissance, we actually started to find more portable art. We had votive pieces and so on, and you generally found they're on timber panels. The centre would have been hollowed, and the painting in the middle and the edge would have been decorated. As they got larger, we actually had problems with the nature of timber and splitting and so on. And gradually the frames became separate from the artwork. They were probably still done in the same studios and so on, were very much part of the entire work.
So, I mean, they're part of the work, you say. They're serving both a practical purpose and an aesthetic purpose.
Yeah, well, they serve a position of protection. They enhance the thing, and they actually connect it to the surroundings. It's not only the surroundings, the physical surroundings, but they tend to connect it to a given period in time. You know, it's a reflection of everything that's going on around it. Things gradually change with the idea of art as opposed to craft, and you start to find that the reflections of the artists tends to take over. We still have a lot of architectural forms and so on, and they really continue right through until the current time. Back to your question, some things don't have frames. If you actually look at an Aboriginal dot painting, you'll find that if you actually enclose it in a frame, the dots, which you can imagine disappearing into infinity. You would actually find that Mark Rothko, for example, actually hated frames. If you could imagine blue poles with the spars coming out the top, if you enclosed them in a frame, you would tend to work against the general feeling and design of the painting.
We think about frames as squares or rectangles around paintings, but today framers like you are asked to frame all kinds of memorabilia, military medals, say, or footballs even, signed by team members. So we've been talking about two dimensions, but how do you approach these three-dimensional projects?
Well, basically, what I've done is develop a protocol, and you ask a series of questions, and you're going to find, because the objects are different, you're going to get widely differing answers. First of all, you actually have to identify it. I mean, if you can't identify it, it's quite obvious you don't know what you're going to do. In period, we would have things like time, place, and personality. When was it? What country? And the personality of the artist. Basically, the rules are applying to everything. If you have, say, Rembrandt and Rubens, they're painting in basically the same period within, say, 20 years of each other, whereas We actually have two totally different personalities. One is introspective, one is outgoing. Rembrandt is painting in Calvinist Holland, Rubens in Catholic
Flanders.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you tend to look into the Rembrandt, whereas the Rubens is more in your face. So then we go from there, from the feel of the thing, to I have a thing called least mechanical, least chemical, and least electrical. Now, when you're handling the artwork, be it a football or a painting or whatever, you really have to keep any outside interference to an absolute minimum. So you don't punch holes in things. You don't use chemical processes that are going to impact on the thing. I mean, even starch paste must have some impact. And then we have electrical, and if we talk about metals, we have electrolytic corrosion where the ions run that. You have a thing called reduction, so that the ions run up the chain toward the noble metal and they scavenge on the metal underneath. If we're looking at the art thing, if I'm doing a football jumper and you've got a fanatical Collingwood supporter, you're starting to go into the emotional thing. If we go back to the medals, I mean, I did hear of someone framing some military stuff from Gallipoli, and this particular framer turned it into what sounds like a holiday camp with seashells and sand and so on. Now, I think this is crazy. You know, I mean, you really are telling a story. I don't think, unless you make an anti-war, pro-war yes. type frame, I think you're just basically acting as a journalist. I mean, the journalism tells the story.
You're telling the wrong story with the Gallipoli thing.
That's right.
But what's the most difficult thing you've ever been asked to frame?
Well, some things, I mean, I think you have to expect the unexpected. I can remember years ago I actually did a metal group from the Boer War, and in the frame there was a clip of bullets that actually stopped a Boer bullet. It was worn on a bandolier. And with hindsight, there were things that I should have done. I didn't deactivate the ammunition. The mercury fulminite is quite dangerous. The cordite was still quite flammable. And in the time since then, you learn. You deactivate them. The last one I had was stuff that had been lying on the jungle floor in New Guinea for 50 years, and I rang up a bomb disposal guy, or through the police got onto a bomb disposal guy, and he simply said, look, it's very simple. You just put them in a pot of cold water, you bring it to the boil, and you boil it for half an hour. Now, I'm not recommending that the general public do this.
Yeah, don't try this at home.
But, no. Yeah, it's the questions. You know, you have to be able to not only know the answer, I suppose it's more important that you actually realise that you don't know.
Well, I hadn't realised framing had such, or could have such explosive consequences. These days you can buy frames off the rack in homeware shops. You can do it yourself. Has this been detrimental to professional picture framers like you?
Yeah, I mean, basically at that end you can't really compete, but you can react to, you know, where you win is where you can react to the client's needs. One of the big problems is that it tends to attract people into the industry. I actually, a few years ago, had a client came in, not a client, but a member of the public, complaining about the price of picture frames, and he said his wife was an artist. And I said, oh, what does she do? And she said, oh, she does paper toll. And, I mean, we are attracting the wrong people into the industry to a certain extent. I think we really need to be art-based. I mean, the government says we're furnishing-based. I don't think that's true.
So what do you want to achieve with your Melbourne exhibition highlighting the art of framing? At the end of the day, should it be the frame or the work of art that catches our attention?
Well, I suppose what am I basically, I mean, I've got a commercial consideration, obviously, but I was originally a teacher. I do enjoy educating people and as to the possibilities of what they can do. As to the rest of it, I mean, it's a combination. But if the frame detracts from the contents, you shouldn't really frame it. Simple as that.
So no framing Jackson Pollock and no framing Mark Rothko.
That's right.
details of Neville Crawford's exhibition on our website, abc.net.au/rn/bydesign. Neville Crawford, thank you very much for joining us today.
Pleasure to be with you.
And we're about to hear the music that frames our programme. Head to that website for our guestbook if you want to let us know what's on your mind. It's also where you can download the show or any bit of any show. You can hear us every Wednesday between 3 p.m. and 4, on Saturday mornings between 9 and 10, and at any time of your choosing on the web. The show is produced by Jan Ryan and Mark Wakeley. Anne-Marie de Bettencourt is the sound engineer, and I'm Alan Saunders.